S on air. DJ's Pepijn, Suus, Chip en Pieter Jan.
ENS on air.
Innovation on air.
Got a little bit trashed last night. I got a little bit wasted.
Yeah.
I got a little bit mashed last night. I got a little shit-faced.
Yeah.
Well.
Some more, so I can
late to your ride, all through it. End up on the floor and can't remember you clueless. Officer, like, what the hell is you doing? Stumbling, fumbling, you wanna what? Come again. Give me hen, give me gin, give me liquor, give me champagne, bubbles till I'm in. What happens after that if you inspire till a friend? I call my homie Tyler, we can all sip again. Get it in, and again, leave evidence. Wasted, so what? Irrelevant. Get picked to the head, who's selling it? I got a hangover, that's my medicine. Don't mean the bag, I sound too intelligent. A little jack can't hurt this veteran. I show up, but I never throw up, so let the drips go up, oh up.
I got a hangover, whoa. I've been drinking too much for sure. I got a hangover, whoa. I got an empty cup, pour me some more.
You listen to Hangover, Tayo Cruz and Flo Rida, and we are at the WAIC, World Appreciative Inquiry Conference. And before this song, you listen to Sandra Silva and Quintino with Epic. And that's
breaking news, uncommon views, and serious gossip.
WAIC, newsflash.
It's time for some news, Pepijn.
Yeah.
What I read on the internet is that in Japan, the city of Kamikatsu, There has been a great transition to a cleaner environment and a waste-free world. They seem to recycle everything.
Whoa, everything like what?
Everything.
Just everything.
So I read a quote of Kikyo Ni, and she says, "When I can't use the whole vegetable or piece of meat, I try to cook it again with wine. It makes very good soup."
All right. Wow.
And
wow.
In the city, you won't find any garbage bin or any litter or anything, because they recycle everything.
So it's there is literally no waste
so
at
it's,
all.
So it's maybe the cradle-to-cradle perspective, but then very extreme.
Yeah, I wonder if we can do this on a conference like this as well.
Could be interesting, yeah, to recycle no everything.
Yeah, fantastic.
Also, something that I would like to mention is that we have some really good plenary sessions. One of the sessions that really pops out of the itinerary of these days is from Professor Dr. Kenneth Gergen and Professor Dr. Daniel Zandi. Mm-hmm. And they go into a dialogue about the newest insight from social constructivism and AI. So I think it's quite relevant for people. Maybe we can even get them in the show tomorrow or the day after, because
yeah.
I think social constructivism is now one of the major themes when we look at education and learning. So
definitely.
Yeah.
Wow, let's try to get them in tomorrow.
So maybe I can continue with some other news if it's okay, because there is a lot of things happening. For instance, in Washington, the grondwet in Dutch, how do you say that in English?
The
constitution
is
being auctioned. So you
in
can
Washington.
Buy the constitution of Washington.
And is that already been sold, or can I still place an offer?
It's about 100 pages, I read. It's the Bill of Rights. And you can do that not in Washington, but in England with Christie's. So, that's, I think, a relevant news theme. It's quite funny also. Maybe some last remarks about the program. I'm just going through the booklet, which is very nice. For instance, the Difficult Fools Workshop. How spiritual beliefs can create fruitful paradoxes for AI.
Oh, right.
So that's about religion, I guess, or spirituality?
Yeah, well, I'm very curious.
Well, interesting.
Maybe we should get these guys in the show as well.
The program goes on and on and on. It's amazing.
It's fantastic. There's so much to do on this world conference.
Absolutely. And maybe last thing, Pepijn.
Yeah.
I'm really quickly looking at the weather again. It's 11 degrees Celsius, but the rain has stopped. It's a little bit lighter, but still there's some fear for thunder and lightning.
I think let's continue appreciate the weather here We're going to phone Nancy Dixon in a minute, but first, this is Coldplay with Clocks.
Played this song for
Patrick Collares, because we know you like Coldplay very much. And for all their listeners, if you are having a request, if you want to hear a song, Twitter, use Twitter hashtag KSOnAir and request your song. On the phone, we have our special guest, Nancy Dixon from Austin, Texas. Nancy, welcome in the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so pleased to be here.
Oh, great stuff. And we are pleased to have you in the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nancy, you are a writer of the book Common Knowledge, and you work a lot with generating knowledge, sharing knowledge, and make more of it. And you also speak a lot of these kinds of conferences. Is that right?
I do indeed.
Yeah. Okay. So my question to you is: how we have an issue in the show about practicing what you preach, and you are going to talk at a knowledge generating conference soon. How do you make such a conference also knowledge generating?
Well, I think that's a very important question to be thinking through. I attend so many conferences that, and many of them are a company, for example, that wants to bring all the people together who have been working on knowledge management. And what I find is that I'm often quite disappointed because what I see happening is that we have a room full of people who are very knowledgeable, who have done a lot of work in knowledge management, who have a great deal of experience. And yet what very often happens at a conference is that there are presenters and that the schedule is to hear one presenter after another.
Yeah, so there's not so much exchange.
Yes, and sometimes a breakout session, but even then I very often find that the breakout sessions are somebody presenting just in a smaller sort of a setting. And so I often feel really quite concerned that we, as knowledge management people, are not practicing what we preach.
Yeah,
that we're
exactly.
Not using the principles of knowledge.
Yeah,
that
and that's actually
about.
A missed chance, you say, with so many knowledgeable people in the around on a conference.
Yes. So what I try to do when I have an opportunity to design and to facilitate those meetings, and this may sound extreme to everyone, but I try to make 80% of that meeting be people in small groups talking, and only 20% to be presentations.
Whoa.
And that's a very big shift, and sometimes conference presenters, that's quite worrisome to them to think, would it really work like that?
Yeah. And I think it's also quite a paradox because some people on a who are visiting a conference also expect a keynote speaker to learn from him. Eh?
Yes, I think that's right. And whether that is an expectation we can change or if that's just a normal thing we expect, the way I think about that, Chip, is to say that I think we need those speakers to inform our thinking,
yeah,
to give us some cognitive diversity, some new ideas, but I don't think we need them to tell us what to do.
Yeah.
So if they're informing our thinking, then we need time in the meeting to think about what they have said.
Yeah. And how are you going to do that on the knowledge management conference from APQC that you have in, I think, tomorrow or the day after tomorrow?
Yes, I'm actually going this evening, so I'll be there for 2 days. When I look, and I didn't have any opportunity to help design this conference, so I'm afraid it is one of those conferences where it's presenter after presenter.
Yeah.
So I have an hour to present.
You have an hour to interact.
So I have an hour to present. and what I will do in that hour is to talk for a few minutes and then put people in small groups for 5 or 10 minutes to talk together.
Yeah.
Then I'll come back again and present for a period of time. And then again, I'll put people in small groups. There's not a whole lot you can do with an hour, but that's when I'm sort of stuck with just having an hour. That's what I try to do, is to divide it up that way so that I'm indeed practicing what I preach as well.
Yeah. So, and indeed, I hear this also as a suggestion for all the participants and also speakers on this conference in Ghent, on the WIC. But you know, also there are moments of interaction. We all know them on conferences where you are at the coffee table and you are walking around not knowing too many people, how do you then interact? What do you do? Do you recognize those moments firstly, and then how do you generate knowledge in these type of interactions?
I do recognize those moments. I don't think they are either sufficient or well enough organized, because I think what people need to do in order to learn from each other is to have a discussion focused on a topic that they all know something about.
Yeah.
And what we find out happens in those coffee breaks is that we either tend to get together with people that we already know. It's much likely that you'll go up to someone and introduce yourself and say, let me tell you what I thought about that last presentation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That tends just not to happen. So I think we need those coffee breaks. If for nothing else, it's just a moment to relax, and certainly to renew older acquaintances. But I don't have any sense that those are times when we actually are doing very much learning from each other.
So Nancy,
maybe we are using those times to arrange meetings when we will learn from someone, but not in those moments. I don't see a lot of learning going on.
Yeah.
Maybe Nancy, a last question from coffee table, from coffee breaks to Texas. I read in a news flash just half an hour ago that in Texas there's a very old couple, a man and a woman, who are married for more than 80 years. So I'm wondering, in Texas, do you know if there are very good marriages there?
Well, I know that I'm not a good example, having been married twice and done away with both.
Oops, Chip. Oh.
Well, maybe when you look around, or in your village or city.
You know, I occasionally do see people, couples that have been married a long time, and several neighbors who are in that situation. But when I look at my granddaughter, who lives with me, my 11-year-old granddaughter, and ask her, she says that nearly everybody in her class are not living with their two original parents.
Wow.
So I think the divorce rate here is very, very high. It's almost unusual now for a child, 11 or 12, to be living with both of their biological parents.
Yeah. So that's quite sad. So it means that we had the exception where we were talking about. And let's keep on emphasizing on these exceptions.
The positive exceptions,
I suppose.
Yeah. Yes.
I have one more question, Nancy. In our next hour, we have David Cooperrider in our show, and I'm a little bit nervous. And of course, you know David.
I do know him, and you're so wonderfully lucky to have him.
I'm pleased.
He's such a good thinker.
Yeah, fantastic. What do you have a question for him? What do I need to ask him?
Oh my, a question for David Cooperrider. I suppose my interest. I started reading and attending some meetings with David Cooperrider. It's been 10, maybe even close to 15 years ago. And so I was very much a part of the beginning of Appreciative Inquiry. But I think it has changed and grown a great deal over the years. And I still use some of those principles, but I have a sense I'm way behind in terms of how his thinking has changed about it.
Yeah.
And my guess is that he's using it in many circumstances that he would not have originally used it in. So I guess that would be my question. You know, how has it changed over time? What have you learned about doing this process?
I'm
sure he's learned an enormous amount with such good people like Diane Whitney around him and all the people who are very committed to it. I'm interested in that history of change across that idea.
We are definitely going to ask that to him, Nancy. Thank you very much for joining our show. You're listening to Wyke Radio. This is Go Back to the Zoo.
Doesn't know my name. You know nothing. Hey DJ, where the kids from the radio?
This was Super Babes with Girls, and before that you heard the Dutch band Go Back to the Zoo with Hey DJ. And I just got the news that on the www.ksonair.nl website there's a poll where you can vote for the national anthem battle, and you can either vote for the Dutchies, two guys, or the Belgian lady,
or Fee, who sang his lungs out.
Yeah, well, if it's up to me, if I could vote, I think she beat you. But
We'll have a look. Nothing is decided yet.
Sorry to say, Chip.
Say hello. Or bonjour.
Say hello.
Just say hello.
Or hola.
Say hello. Just say hello.
Or guten tag.
Say hello.
Just say hello. Hello.
To home.
Just say hello to home. Well, I must say the tension is rising and rising in the studio because David Cooperrider is coming to us. But first we have these two beautiful ladies and some guys in the studio as well who are going to say hello. First of all, we have Anna from Romania, isn't it?
Yes, hello.
Hello, Anna. To whom do you want to say hello?
I want to say hello to my friends, to my family actually first. I want to salute you all. And be happy for me.
Okay. And how do you say hello in Romanian?
In Romanian. Salutare prieteni.
Salutare prieteni. All right. Yes. Great stuff. Are you enjoying the conference?
Yes, very much. I really like this place. I really like this new experience. It's really new for me. And I really nice being here.
Oh, fantastic.
And thank you for inviting me to say something.
You're very welcome. Yeah, but you're very
maybe
welcome.
You want to say something more into the camera and maybe wave to your family and friends because they can see it on the KNS On Air website. You can look at that camera.
Hi.
Hi, people from home. In the studio, we also have Inauda. And Inauda, you're now... Inauda, you are from Brazil, aren't you? You're from Brazil, Inauda. Aren't you, Inauda?
Yes.
Okay, welcome. What brings you to Ghent?
I come for Ghent to participate the conference.
Yeah.
And I can say hello?
Yeah.
Yes, to who do you like to say hello?
I say hello to my family in Brazil, to my husband that he is in Ghent with me, and say hello for all.
Oh, you can do it in the camera. Maybe you can do it in your own language if you like, because they're watching now. Oh, it's this camera. Sorry.
Okay. In my language. Olá, todo mundo. Quem está me vendo, me ouvindo. Um beijo. Estou aqui em Ghent, cidade maravilhosa. Tudo de bom. Quem não conhece, venha conhecer.
Wow.
I think no doubt about that.
No. Very clear. And okay. A beautiful language. Thank you very much for being in the show.
And there's another guy standing behind you. And I see that your name is Antonio Sandu.
Antonio.
Yes.
Antonio,
hi,
where are
I'm
you
Antonio.
From?
Also from Romania.
Also from Romania.
And to whom do you want to say hello?
Well, say hello to all of you, all of the guests here, and all of the world. A world of appreciative.
Oh, that's very nice and warm. Thank you very much. Looking forward to
I thank you too.
Okay, great stuff. In the coming hour, we have David Cooperrider. I'm getting hotter and hotter. Chip, you are going to leave us after this.
Yeah, I have. I've done 2 hours of radio show. My next, I have a short rest. So, but I will be missing then the interview with David Cooperrider. I will definitely be listening.
You'll be on the background here.
Fast.
You're listening to WAIC Radio. We are at the World Appreciative Inquiry Conference in Ghent. And in a minute, we're going to talk to David Cooper-Ryder. If you have any suggestions for questions to David, please tweet hashtag KS on air.
KNS on air. DJs Pepijn, Suus, Chip en Pieter-Jan.
KNS on air.
Innovation.
Don't Cry from The Cure. And I have a very nice smiling lady on my desk here.
Hello, welcome world.
Welcome world, welcome Suzanne. You're joining the show as a DJ. And,
yeah, it's already the third hour.
Yeah, indeed. And it's still Wyke Radio. And are you a bit nervous for the upcoming interview, meeting him. Meeting him with a capital H.
The big David Cooper writer. I'm very curious to meet him live and to have him in person in the studio.
Yeah, fantastic. We are definitely going to put him on the hotspot. And, well, I'm curious how he experienced the conference. We have lots of questions for him.
Of course. And it's curious because we're standing here making radio already for two hours. But all the conference participants are still in the big main room listening to all those keynote speakers, interacting with each other. And sometimes you see someone to sneak out to go to the bathroom to do the necessary things. But yeah. Most of the people are still inside the big conference room.
All right. So they work hard. And there's a lot to do about appreciative inquiry. So we're going to listen to another song, which is Likey Lee.
Likey Lee.
Here we go. In our studio, we have Ashwin Pudasain. Do I pronounce that right?
Sure. Okay. Por essa linha.
And for the people who are watching the webcam, you are having a beautiful hat. Where's that from? Is that a traditional hat?
Yeah, it's a Nepali national hat.
Right. Is everybody wearing that kind of hat in Nepal?
Yeah, it's a national hat, and most of the people wear this Nepali Dhaka topi.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because you can recognize the Nepalese delegates here in the conference very easily because you're all wearing this beautiful headwear.
Yes, we are five and we all are using the hat.
Oh, Nepali great. Hat. On what altitude do you live in Nepal?
It is in... we are in 1300.
1300?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's reasonable, but breathing in Ghent is probably nicer. You were organizer of the conference in 2009 in Nepal, and now you joined the session with David Cooperrider.
Yeah, I just joined the session of Dr. David Cooperrider.
What was the most intriguing story that you heard?
Oh, very interesting thing is that I saw him. He was in 2009 in Nepal. And what I found is that he is sharing the learning from the different part of the world, and he has that craftsmanship, that skill to accumulate, to link, and to develop such a positive statement, powerful statement about the importance and the use benefit of the appreciative inquiry approach.
In that sense, he is very worldwide oriented and connecting to many, many people all over the world.
Yes, he had that much of skill, craftsmanship, which demonstrate the ability to connect the positive, success stories with the success in the future.
And why does that appeal so much to you?
Okay. Really, when I heard about the appreciative inquiry in my life, that I realized the value of positivity, value of the strength, value of the some imaginations, and started my living with that approach. So,
You started living according to the... Can you tell a little bit about how that looks like?
We just talked about practice what you preach.
But exactly.
Yes, very wonderful. Thank you very much for a very good question and inspiring question for me to dig out my learning from Nepal. What we say in Nepal is that think from core of your heart, speak what you think, and act what you say. It means... shop to the people, work with the people, what you think, share with them what you feel, and act according to your feelings. Heart, mind, and hand need to be together.
Yeah. Heart, mind, and head need to be together. That's said very well. That sounds beautiful. But it's also not something that's maybe always easy to do.
Obviously not. But when you practice doing this, it's much easier than other things. Like you are a journalist working in the radio stations as an anchor or the RJ. You are doing means that you are practicing this, and your feeling, your aspiration is to be the best radio anchor, radio broadcaster. So that makes you to act it after a few years, after 10, 20 years. What do you mean? That would be used to in your life, in your day-to-day life.
Yeah.
Your culture, habits, and you will be the great one.
Thank you. That's a good advice. And I'm also curious how it works for your own life. Can you give an example of how you integrate the head and the mind and the heart and the hands?
Okay. What I used to do in my school days was I used to read the book and share my learning with others. And what I feel I didn't share with others. That means when you go somewhere else, you feel some different and you don't share with others. Oh, this is my different feeling. But when my grandfather one day say that, what are you thinking now? I share the funny things, what I thought, I share it. And next week, he brought me somewhere in the downtown and asked, what you are thinking now? I share the stupid thing. And what he...
What is...
What he advised that? Yes, thank you. Go ahead. Yeah. Tell me. Tell me the fact. About, what you think. What
it's
you
about
feel.
Sharing what you think. Yes, but yes. Also, as
the,
you...
The important thing is that what he encouraged me is that sharing my inspiration, my idea, my feelings. And I started the sharing with the people, what I think, with others. And I started doing... What I talked about.
Yeah. I love it. It also invites us and everybody here to ask each other sometimes, what do you think or what do you feel, instead of keeping it for yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your beautiful story about your grandfather.
You're still listening to Wyke Radio, powered by KS On Air. This is Toto
Thank
with
you very much giving
Africa.
Me this opportunity. I'm from Nepal, the top of the world, Mount Everest, country of Mount Everest, getting this opportunity to share my learning with David Cooper Ryder. Thank you so much.
Hear the drums echoing tonight, and she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words. Melodies. He turned to me as if to say, hurry boy, it's waiting there for you. They grow restless, longing for some solitary company. I know that I must do what's right, sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I've become.
Well, on the hotspot, there is Mr. David Cooper-Ryder. Welcome in the radio show.
Welcome, David.
Thank you.
We're so honored to have you here. It's just great. And I'm really curious because you were the main keynote speaker. You're one of the founders of the Appreciative Inquiry way of thinking. And you just had your keynote speech. Were you nervous?
No, I'm very excited.
Very excited.
Yeah, very excited to be back in Belgium.
Yeah. Because you were here before in Belgium.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful experience for 3 months in teaching at Catholic University in Leuven.
Oh.
And brought our children and family, and we stayed in the Begijnhof.
In the Begijnhof.
Yeah, for 3 months.
Oh, awesome. For three months. And yesterday you also were here for the pre-conference.
Yes.
And I'm really curious, you've probably also talked to a couple of people. What is the story that you heard until now that kind of keep you with you?
I really liked the story today about Genzyme, one of the companies here locally. That's the top place to work, and they went from very difficult circumstances to perhaps the top place to work in terms of the way it's created a culture of engagement and bringing whole systems of people together to plan and design and collectively create their future.
They really managed to make a shift.
They managed to make a huge shift, and I think there's lessons for all of our companies, because deeply buried in every one of our companies are people who are just dying to be tapped on the shoulder and brought into the strategic planning of their company and so on.
You are also seen as the founding father of Appreciative Inquiry. How do you see that?
How is it to be a founder?
Well, it's exciting. And like any idea, there's a lot of people involved, and the creativity around the world today in terms of all the new things that we never would have thought about is quite extraordinary. But early on, we had a real hotbed of great thinking going on at Case Western Reserve University. In about 1979, I got started. In 1982, my colleague Suresh Srivastava and I and Ron Fry and several others really began to notice just how locked we were, how locked our world was in a deficit-based approach to change, you know. That the only kind of change that we could conceive was the inner dialogue in our newspapers and the negativity and so on. We started questioning all of that. You know, organizations are not problems to be solved.
But no.
What happens if we reverse our assumptions and we say organizations are centers of relationships, and relationships come alive where there's an appreciative eye, where people see the true, the good, the better, the possible, and lift up and create these alignments of strengths. So it's been very exciting as we develop theories about a non-deficit, positive approaches to change. But then all the applications that have emerged are extraordinary. And my sense of hope about what we're capable of as human beings today has just gone up and up and up. We're learning, for example, how to do this kind of appreciative inquiry work with, 500 people in the room from the company, from every level. So if you...
Yeah, so many people are involved with those organizations.
That's right.
That makes it having a big impact.
That's right.
I'm having a question for you because earlier in the show, we spoke to Nancy Dixon. She's not here. She was in Texas. And we were very honored to have her in the show as well. And we asked her, what would you like to ask to David Cooper-Ryder? Well, she wants us to say hi to you. Well, now. And she was also very curious. She says the way of thinking about appreciative inquiry has grown over the years. And she was actually really curious to hear from you how you have developed over time. So what is your newest insight, or what did you learn?
I think the first of all, I think that we've learned years ago that relationships come alive where there's appreciative eye. Secondly, we learned that the way we frame the world around us determines where we end up. So, companies often do a low morale survey in order to improve the morale.
Yeah.
But really, there's a different topic here, and how do we create a high engagement, magnetic work environment?
Yeah.
Where the bond is so strong it can't be broken. And what we're finding is that as we inquire, human systems move in a direction of what they ask questions about most frequently and deliberately and constantly. And so I think what's most exciting for me is the art of the question. We have a book called The Encyclopedia of Positive Questions, where
I've had it in my bookshelf.
And it's fabulous to see what happens to systems and coming together of multiple stakeholders and how it can drive creativity and innovation when you have a question that unlocks that kind of imagination.
So the power of generative questions, or questions that evoke like the direction that you want to go in.
That's right. I call it the unconditional positive question.
Unconditional positive question.
Is the study at British Airways, is the study about excessive baggage loss, or what is it that we really want to learn? Well, maybe we want to learn about outstanding arrival experiences. That's what our customer wants.
And instead of baggage loss.
And what makes the question unconditional? What do you exactly mean with that?
Unconditional means that all of those kinds of questions. We can study anything in any organization, anywhere. We can study, you know, conflict and debilitating bureaucracy in every organization. We could also study improbable collaboration and improbable departments working with each other. We could study, breakdown in relationships. We can study alienation. We could study hope, inspiration, and joy, and what are the causes of that kind of experience. And which it means that all of it is there. And so it says, then why do we ask questions the way we do? Because the questions we ask will determine what we find. And so unconditional means, my assumption is that everything that we need to learn about the success and life-giving factors of that organization are there in that organization.
And I'm curious because said the baggage loss and find, like, delivering excellent baggage, you said it's all about relationships that have to grow. Yeah. And when I have clients, they never ask me, Suus, can you help me to let our relationships grow? But they ask about baggage or about results.
Right.
How do you relate that to each other?
Yeah. I think working with your clients around the results that they want is really important. Appreciative inquiry often is very task-focused, but it's in the process of co-creating and designing the future that the relationships and trust begins to evolve. We're learning a lot from designers, for example. Yeah. If you go into a design studio, you see hot teams and you see collaboration. They're working on deadlines for the new cell phone or the new iPad or whatever. But designers come away through the design of something tangible and results-oriented with a huge development of trust and camaraderie. Design studios are hot places. And what we're finding is the same thing in organizations. And so we have like four phases in the appreciative inquiry process: discovery, which is a search for everything that gives light, the positive core of assets, all the past, present, and future capacity of a system. Then we use that to help a system begin to imagine, not only what's best, but what's next. What is our image, and what are those guiding images of results in the future? But then we go into this design phase where we build and create rapid prototypes of the future. Like in Cleveland, we brought the whole city. The mayor launched a summit to build a green city on a blue lake, an economic engine to build a green city on a blue lake. And it's so exciting when we bring 700 business leaders and
700
and citizens and neighborhoods and educators and think tanks and universities and government officials to design for 2019, a 20-year, thinking way out into the future. But as people design, not just have a good dialogue, but design something very important to them. They design the imagery and the prototype of the offshore wind energy system, then all of a sudden trust bursts, overflows. People love,
we don't work directly
with those human relationships. The trust and social capital, those things ensue from working on the right high purpose.
Yeah. Working on design or making things helps to create those relationships.
Exactly. I talked with Jimmy Carter at one point after his presidency, and I used an appreciative inquiry question. I said, can you tell me the high point moment in your career, President Carter? And he said, that's easy, David. He said, it's right after we've built a Habitat for Humanity house, and we are standing in a circle, and we've crossed every class boundary in our society, every racial boundary, and we've come together, and he points then to the house, and you can see the visible impact of our coming together. He said at those moments, tears of joy are streaming for him. And I think, you know, like in America, when, in the early days, there was the pioneers who would come together with all of their materials, their hammer, their nails, their wood, and they'd build their neighbor's barn. It's in that designing and building together. Dialogue isn't enough today.
Yeah.
You need to go a step further and really do something together, emphasize on the relationship and look to the future. That's right.
Feel you that say. Sense of creativity and accomplishment.
I have one very curious question. We're talking about appreciative inquiry and building trust. If you would have an argument within your family or with someone you live with, is there also a way to argue with one another in an appreciative way?
Yeah. And there's not only an opportunity to argue, but also to explore different meanings. You know, okay, let's take another perspective here,
and
let's get some perspective from the outside. And you bring the whole system together to help think about that.
Okay, but I have to admit that when I'm at house making a quarrel about who should do the dishes, for instance, that I'm not always thinking about. Let's see what different meanings there are.
So is this a request for coaching today?
yeah, maybe.
Okay, so think about it, because we've all had conflict in those relationships.
Yeah.
There's been ups and downs. I'd like you to tell me a story of about a time where your conflict was the healthiest.
Okay, so you're going to look for a healthy conflict and discuss that.
Yeah, I'd like to know.
Yeah.
You have had, we've all had times of healthier and unhealthier moments of dealing with conflict and difference and anger and fear and so on.
Well, for me, a moment of a healthy conflict is always when you're maybe not agreeing with each other or having difficulty to find each other, but at least listen to each other or feeling seen.
Right. And what are the conditions that lead to you listening to each other?
And you mean the conditions in the situation that you're in?
Yeah.
Well, you actually like each other or maybe love each other.
Right. Yep.
You are curious to what the other thinks.
So that's partly what appreciative inquiry is about, is searching for those moments that can teach us and give meaning to the kind of future that we want to create.
I think back home they will be very happy with this with this interview. Thank you very much, David, for your time and for all the beautiful things you said. We see already a lot of people coming in, or actually out of the conference, big conference room, coming into the main room here. People having drinks and having chats. So I would suggest you to take part in that.
Yeah.
And we're going to listen to a next song, which is from the Kaiser Chiefs. This is Ruby.
The Wyke Radio Station, powered by KNS On Air. WIKE radio station. Powered by KNS On Air.